Hey guys and girls, welcome back to Molecule to Market, where we go inside the outsourcing space of the global drug development sector. And this is a special episode celebrating International Women's Day that was earlier this year. And as many of you may have seen, what we tried to do in the run-up to IWD was have kind of several podcasts, like a series that featured female leaders in our sector. So we are taking a very proactive approach in trying to champion female leaders in the pharma and biopharma outsourcing in biotech and pharma space, which is wonderful. And so what we thought might be quite cool was to stitch together some of the best bits from those episodes and bring them to your ears. So if you missed any of those episodes, here is an opportunity for you to kind of get a little stack of those episodes. And if you like them, then you might want to go back and listen to the whole thing. So first up is one of my favorite people in the world. We have a huge history together, Denise Bowser, who was co-founder and commercial director at Onyx Scientific. And Denise and I have known each other for probably over 10 years. She was actually one of my first clients. When I first started remarketing, she took a chance on me, which I'm forever grateful for. And a relatively recluse person, generally, Denise actually really opened up on her episode, and she talked about many things, in terms of dealing with downturns and going through the menopause and equality and lots of kind of great topics that people found really, really interesting. And the kind of snippet, though, that we've taken today was more, I suppose, a business one, that kind of journey that Onyx Scientific went through to ultimately being acquired by Ipca. I think it was back in 2012 or so. I might have got the date wrong. So it's a very relevant material for a lot of you guys now who are either acquiring businesses or being acquired, and lots of learning. So enjoy this clip from Denise.
I think if we go back a little bit before that, we were acquired in 2011, and prior to that, we'd gone through the recession, as everybody did, and it was fairly rough. So, we felt quite vulnerable as a standalone company. We had to downsize through the recession. We had to protect the business, and we kept to our core principles and really rode the storm. We came out of the recession, and we came under the radar of Ipca, who were looking for a contract service company. So we met with them initially, and they did due diligence on the company, and they liked what they saw. We were their first acquisition outside of India, so for them, it was quite a proud moment for them, in terms of buying a company of our location. And realistically, it gave us strength in the sense that we could push on with the growth of the company without having to worry about such a short-term situation as we had done in the past. So it allowed us to really focus on what we did best and grow to the point that we've done today. That's really meant that we've moved the services slightly. We've expanded them. We now offer commercial API manufacturing, and that was a big kind of area to take on for us. But it gives us better long term future in terms of being able to offer more for our clients.
Next up is Audrey Greenberg, who also starred in a terrific episode as part of our series. And she, like Denise, is a real character, but very different, actually. Very out there, very strong profile in the industry, in the business community. She was an investment person by trade, and then ended up becoming the founder and MD of the Center for Breakthrough Medicines, which is now part of SK Pharmteco. And Audrey talked very kind of openly about her journey from kind of a banking background to learning about biotech and ultimately developing a very entrepreneurial career That led to kind of numerous startups, which, you know, is a really, really fascinating story. And she is a super energetic individual as well, which kind of comes across. And so, again, what we thought we'd do is take kind of a snippet of some of her early journey, where she talked about kind of being an analyst and working on boards in New York. And again, we thought this might be kind of a useful clip to give you a little bit of a taste of this episode. Enjoy.
I think at a very sort of young age, and maybe this was because of my time at Deloitte, where they would give you time to go serve on nonprofit boards, right? So I went through this United Way board training program back in the 90s or something. And I got placed on a couple nonprofit boards when I lived in New York City. And I think what I got from that was how much it benefits you while at the same time benefiting, obviously, the nonprofit institution. So one of the things, young professionals, there's always this conversation around the forest and the trees, right? If you're an accountant or you work in finance, you're obviously very much in the spreadsheet, very much in the details, doing the analytics, but you may not get the big picture. I was always so astounded as a young analyst when I would show my beautiful, what I thought was this amazing PowerPoint presentation to my managing director, and he would look at it and say, you know, you got this valuation completely. How could you not understand? And it was so interesting to me in 3 seconds how they could just digest the information and think about it from a big picture perspective. And I do think that that's what board service gives you. It gives you the perspective of the forest, right? You're able to see the risk environment, the market environment, the disruptors in the space, the competition. You have to think about all that from a very high level to steer a company or a nonprofit in the right direction to have a going concern or to being very successful. And so board service gives you that perspective. And it's also nice for me personally. Look, I've done so many things, right? I worked at Vest Banking. I worked in accounting. I worked in private equity. I started a couple companies and I was successful exits. Having that experience and being able to bring that to the table to another company that with people that either don't understand or need help or whatever it is, being able to bring that track record to somebody else and helping them navigate their environment is really rewarding.
Next up, we have Kendall. Kendall is an absolute dynamite of a guest. Kendall Berlin O'Connell, which I should have said, who is CEO and president at MassBio, which is, as you probably know, one of the kind of most influential kind of biotech associations in the world. And she has won numerous accolades, including one of Boston Business Journal's Power Top 50 last year, and is a real kind of influencer and, and leader in the women's leadership space in the biotech kind of arena. And again, you know, like many of the other guests, Kendall talks about her ups and downs and ultimately kind of navigating her way up to the top of MassBio over a 15-year period, which I thought was really fantastic. And she, you know, we get into the detail about what it was like on that journey and then what it felt like to become CEO. So really inspirational stuff for many of you guys who are on that journey and want some examples of people that have kind of done what you're trying to do. Enjoy.
It was a combination of excitement because I love this organization. At the time, I'd given this organization 14 years of my life, and I'd been responsible for building many of the programs and services that we offered. It was, and to think that I would now have the opportunity to lead the direction of the organization into the next chapter was so exciting to me. It was also overwhelming. We do a lot as an organization, right? We are a membership organization. We have 1,600 member companies. And by virtue of that, we represent hundreds of thousands of employees, right, as part of that membership community. So we have a lot of programs and services that we run, and these companies rely on them. And so to make sure all of that was continuing to be successful, we're also a really big policy shop. And that was the only hat I had never worn. I wasn't a former politician and I wasn't a lobbyist. And so the thought of having to learn the nuance of what we were doing on a state policy front and what was happening on a federal policy front was daunting. The other piece to think that, okay, I'm very social. I love people. I love building relationships. And I knew how to run the business, but I had never been a figurehead. And so to think about taking on that role was really scary too, to think about doing all of these media interviews and to have my face in the paper. I didn't have to do that before. So there were these things that would keep me up at night. But as an adult, and you can probably relate to this, right? You don't have that many chances to challenge yourself anymore, right? You could sort of live in this status quo, right? And be comfortable with that. But for me, it was like, I loved the opportunity to continue to challenge myself. And it was in those moments of doing something I was scared to do or never thought I would do that I felt like being proud of yourself is a really good feeling.
Next up, we have Elizabeth Stamper, who is president of Medicines for Europe and a board chair at Medichem SA. And, you know, Elizabeth is a really classy character, I would say, and I really enjoyed our conversation. We were introduced by a gentleman called Manuel Lee at Ardena, who Manuel and I have known each other for a long time, good friend, and also a previous podcast guest from many years ago, actually. And I was so honored to be introduced to Elizabeth, given kind of her background. And it's a background that includes quite a lot of struggles in terms of taking over her family's pharmaceutical business, having to turn that business around. It was going through some real challenges and kind of how it, you know, ultimately led to kind of rationalizing, diversifying, and then building or rebuilding a business that's now worth, you know, it generates revenues of $140 million plus in the kind of API and finished dosage for form space, which again is just phenomenal given kind of where it was. And but the kind of angle that we take in is more less around her company journey and more around her role at Medicines for Europe. And she talked about the impact of the pandemic on Europe in particular and the importance of kind of keeping drugs flowing through Europe and actually how that ultimately led to fighting the pandemic, and also just some points out around some of the challenges the future holds in Europe. Enjoy.
The association is almost 30 years old, so it has been there for a while. However, it gained a lot of traction and became very well known because during the pandemic, unfortunately, most of the products used in the emergency rooms and to keep the patients were generic products, and the company, the association, was pushing extremely hard together with FPA to keep the roads open, allow the free movement of at least of medicines and active ingredients, so that the pharmaceutical companies could continue producing the medicines for COVID, but also for any other treatment. In Europe. So that was really a turning point for the association. The association is based in Brussels. There are 26 national associations who are members, besides a little bit over 30 independent companies, besides being member of the national association, now have their own voice within Medicines for Europe. And basically, it's trying to promote the use of generics and biosimilars and make sure the patients in Europe have access to affordable medicines, and then that can be the older stuff like generics, or the newer biosimilars which are currently on the market. And as for value-added medicines, those are unfortunately not yet recognized in Europe like they are in the US, but that's one of the things the association is trying to promote, because there is a lot of very interesting repurposing of drugs, like giving a second life with the new indications or new dosage forms, what in the US is known as a 505(b)(2). And there is a regulatory pathway established in Europe. There's still no regulatory pathway. And the drugs are not reimbursed at national level. So this is one of the advocacy points of also of the associations.
Last but certainly not least is a really lovely character who I've gotten to know really, really well over the last year or so. And I'm definitely going to get her name wrong because I did that last time. But Sabina Wiemer-Stores, who is, a partner at GHO Capital Partners, which is one of the kind of largest PE funds in the healthcare space. Real fantastic to see a young female leader flying the flag in a space that, as you will know, is predominantly dominated by guys, the banking, investment banking, PE space. And it was fantastic to have Sabina alongside other guests, James and Derek, on the M&A roundtable special that we had in March. And some great insights from all of our guests, but particularly Sabina as well. And what this, I thought the snippet that we have taken today is probably one looking, which is helpful in kind of looking at how 2024 will develop and, how important capital will be and the M&A shift that we're seeing in the market. So some really, really vital content in there for any of you kind of planning deals or, looking to exit or whatever in the year ahead.
Well, look, I think for us, like we were super active in, 2021 and early 22. So we had, the benefit of being able to kind of look within and kind of nurture what we just bought versus, needing to kind of go out and do a bunch of deals. I would say, I very much echo what Derek and James have said in terms of the volatility, some of the processes that we did enter. The bid-ask spread was, super wide and processes, just fell apart and we just didn't spend, much time just because, why kind of waste resources when just the value expectations are so wide. I do think, though, that in 24, things will need to start to shift. Private equity is in the market of fundraising. And you can't raise funds without selling businesses, as we all know. And I think people are going to start to have to wrap their heads around perhaps selling their businesses for slightly lower return in order to prove the concept, return money to investors, and then go for the next one. So I think, we can't kind of hold on to this cycle of just holding on to our assets. Things are going to have to start to move. And I do think, coming back to the interest rate comments earlier in the discussion, I think the sentiment is hopefully, the Fed will start to cut rates towards the back half of this year. And that will give people, a lot more confidence and stability as to where rates might go. And that will, hopefully, I don't know if the floodgates will open, but they'll definitely start to trickle through, I think, towards the end of this year.
There you have it. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Just a little snippet of some of the fantastic female guests that we've had on the podcast. As always, thank you for listening. Please leave us a kind rating wherever you're listening to today's podcast. Several of these guests were actually nominated. And so if you want to nominate a guest, then please do so. That's something that's really, really working well in getting the caliber of guests that we're getting on. And so please do have a think about who you think would make a great guest on Molecule to Market. Thanks again. See you soon. Hi again. Thanks for tuning in to today's show. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. For more shows, have a look on Spotify, Apple, or Amazon, wherever you like to listen. And do make sure that you subscribe so the next episode comes direct to your device automatically. And please get in touch via our website, Molecule to Market Pod, or via LinkedIn or Twitter. We love to hear from you. So if you have a guest that you want to suggest or someone in your organization that you think would make a great guest on Molecule to Market, then please let us know. We'll see you very soon.
You're listening to Molecule to Market, where we go inside the outsourcing space of the global drug development sector. The podcast for professionals working in the pharma and biotech contract services space. Molecule to Market is sponsored and funded by Remarketing, an international content, digital, and design agency that helps companies get noticed, raise profile, and generate leads in life sciences.